a tool that's used quite extensively. I don't know, how many are familiar with the SWOT process? So what I thought, there seemed to be a lot of conversation with regards to who do we want to be when we grow up from an economic development standpoint. And so what I did was I just put together a couple slides, and those who aren't familiar with SWOT, again, it's a pretty commonly used business tool, and it's real simple. It's to understand what your weaknesses are. You can do this for your personal life, you can do this for your business, you can do this for anything. In this case, how might it apply relative to economic development? So essentially, it's a matter of taking a look at what our economic development strengths are, what our weaknesses, and that's primarily an internal approach. And then from an external standpoint, we take a look at what opportunities or threats that we have. Now, in order to build the matrix, if you look at our strengths, what advantages does the county have? What does the county do better than anyone else? And again, you could look at that in reference to counties that surround us or the state in general. What unique or lowest cost resources can you draw upon that others can't? What do people in your market see as your strengths? What is the county's unique selling proposition? If you look at our weaknesses, what could we improve? What should we avoid? What are people in your market like to say as weaknesses? What factors lose your sales? Now again, sales would be if you're in a business, but in the sense of a government is, what factors would lose companies from coming here? Again, you need to consider both the internal and the external perspective. Do other people seem to perceive weaknesses that you don't? And maybe some of the newbies that come in, maybe they may have some perspective in terms of maybe weaknesses that they see. Maybe the people that have been here the longest that feel that they've got some grievances and they aren't being considered. So I think public comment could add a lot to this area. In terms of opportunities, we talked a little bit about this morning. What good opportunities can you spot? What interesting trends are you aware of? Useful opportunities can come from a number of different things. It could be technology. We talked a lot about broadband or the fiber optics earlier. We're going through changes in government policy today. How about changes in social patterns, population profiles, lifestyle changes, and so on? And I think what is...
That's what we had,
okay. The other is threats, and that is we can't feel complacent with what we have. What are the threats that may come in? It could be a county that is better positioned, takes business away from us. So all I'm asking is that if this is a tool that you haven't used, and I'm sure that the consultant is quite familiar with SWOT. I mean, it's a very common
planning
tool.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if they've already mentioned it to you in terms of would that be a good tool to use, but it might be interesting to take a look at that approach. I mean, this is the perfect set of people that would be able to answer those questions in terms of strengths and weaknesses, opportunities and threats. So I just offer it up, and I think more importantly, selfishly, is I think the public would understand that. If the public would understand how the county views its strengths, its weaknesses, its opportunities and its threats, I think it helps connect for them in terms of the process you're going about looking into the future. So I appreciate the opportunity to come back up today, Chairman.
Sure.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you. Okay, who's next? Okay.
Oh, Rodney's not going to like our water initiative.
I'll try to make this brief. My name is Rodney Wyatt with Artesian, 664 Churchman's Road, Newark, Delaware. It's our headquarters. We also have an office here in Sussex County. Debated whether to come up and talk, but I figured since I'd sit here for 4 hours and listen to this, I'd say a few things. First of all, concerning the tiered approach, our company supports that. I mean, I think it's a good process. It's something that we follow. We're a company that likes to follow rules, and as long as we understand the rules and they're followed by the other folks, then we're okay with that. A couple of things, the regionalization, I don't know if we had a crystal ball, but when we were looking at how to operate systems and our business approach, we learned real quickly that running small systems in a satellite fashion wasn't going to work for us. So we started regionalize everything. We're starting to abandon systems that are not profitable. We were very fortunate to be able to work into interconnection agreements with the county. So systems that weren't profitable for us, we could send wastewater to the county, and systems that were a problem for the county, they're sending wastewater to us. So that was a very important aspect. And when you look at that, from a even from a business approach, the bottom line is the people of Sussex County are paying for the wastewater facilities and the costs associated with running them. In addition to that, the standalone systems you guys talked about, you know, as I mentioned, it's not profitable for us, and you guys really should look at the size and make sure that these systems, if they're going to be standalone on their own, they're going to be cost-effective to operate, because they're left with the homeowners association or a struggling, you know, person that thinks they can run a mobile home park, and they just can't do it if their costs are not profitable. In addition to that, these septic systems, we have recently started, you know, actually providing regional service to some existing customers. I think it's mainly a direct result in the new requirements for septic system replacements. These nutrient-reducing systems are very expensive. I mean, when they have to pay $30,000 and they can hook to us for, you know, about a third of that, then they're asking for that to happen. But as Hans has mentioned before, when you create these subdivisions with, you know, septic systems, you have to understand if you're doing a regional system in there with a collection system, you'd be putting in that wastewater system first. So it's always a challenge to try to serve these projects when they already have all the other utilities in place. So really want to make sure you keep an eye on that part of it. Concerning water systems, you know, I think we're in pretty good shape. We're very fortunate in Sussex County to have, you know, a lot of groundwater that can be used for drinking water purposes. We, however, do practice a lot of interconnections. We're interconnected with as many other municipalities and our competitor system as we can. So with that, if there's no other questions.
Can I ask a question, and for both you and Hans? Where are we today? Because the regionalization works, but say 5, 7, or 10 years ago, what we would hear is that to make it work, you needed to have, you know, enough EDUs connected to it so that the system worked and you had the funds to build the plant or whatever. And so with the economy or whatever, if a couple or three developments, you know, went away, the other ones that were viable sometimes would get stuck because, and I'm not saying with Artesian necessarily, I'm not pointed, but you'd end up with everybody assuming they were going to have off-site central wastewater treatment at a plant that couldn't be built because there wasn't enough users out there because projects were falling off the map. Have we gotten past that now, or is as an industry, I guess? I don't want to talk about you guys. It's just in Hans, too.
I think, you know, from my perspective, we've gotten past that in that, you know, we've built up enough clientele. Now, I mean, don't get me wrong, we still have to start certain areas in a pump and all scenario to get the pump stations and the right velocities in the pipes and stuff to move. What we're doing now is we went in and got conditional uses for our facility so we could serve off-site, because you need to maximize your infrastructure and your facilities. So I think we're past that point. I mean, I think most projects, and if you're not, there could be a long-term solution of how you're going to get to that point if a project needs to go forward. I'll give you a great example. Okay, we had a client who came to us in an area where we knew the county was going to serve, and it was the villages of Heron Bay. No, villages of Heron Creek, I'm sorry. And they wanted us to be the wastewater provider there. And I said, look, the county's going to be here. You know, we'll temporarily, you know, run a system for you. But when the county gets here, you know, we're going to abandon CPCN, and you're going to connect into the system. And then you'll have the opportunity to reclaim the land that we're going to be used. And it worked out great. And we've did that on a number of occasions. We've never sold a CPCN. We've abandoned CPCNs. It is a little tricky because you have to get the property owners to opt out, as well as get you know, provide a solution for them. So as long as you can do all of that, it works. But it's great that we've got, you know, fresh blood that allows us to plan the sandbox and provide, you know, wastewater service and water service to the residents of Sussex County the most cost-effective way we can.
Yeah, that's great, because and talking to Hans, and that's the way it seems like it's going, which is fantastic. That's why I sort of added as a softball question that I tossed you. I didn't want to, but it's important to get on the record, because I didn't want people to feel that we were promoting regionalization that was then going to hold people hostage, you know, because they've got to regionalize their wastewater treatment, but there's no place for them to pump to, you know, or maybe decade before they can, and they can't sell their subdivision, you know, build houses or whatever.
Yeah, you know, we are a property owner rights company, so we do support the fact that the property owners make the decision to become part of our system. Yeah. I know it's kind of tough, you know, to swallow that sometimes when, I mean, it would be real easy to just say, well, hey, everybody has to hook, but, you know, I don't think that's what we would support. The other thing is that, you know, I wanted to mention that some of the projects that were issues, and such as the Millsboro project and a couple of others, those were projects that were actually created a long time before wastewater was actually regulated by the Public Service Commission. And furthermore, since the county developed the rules that we have to provide our plan to the county engineer to show how we're going to provide service before they'll approve us applying for the CPCN, has been working out great. I mean, we've been working real hard. It actually makes me keep my pencil sharpened and plan a little bit better. Okay?
Thanks, Rodney.
Is there any questions?
One question.
Yes.
I mean, where do you see the growth areas in the county in the next 10 years? Do you have any idea where you're thinking that you're likely to put in new central sewer districts or expansions, or what's in your crystal ball?
Well, I mean, it's pretty clear if you look at the maps where we have all of our wastewater CPCNs. We've stayed out of the county's area where they have been providing service, and we've developed basically from like Stonewater all the way up to Milton, a regional system that we're going to interconnect. As Hans mentioned, there's a couple of commercial, such as Allen's, Wren's facility there. We've picked up that. So we think the development, you know, is naturally going to be towards the beach area, but it's going to be, you know, just behind Route 24, where, quite honestly, is the affordable land is.
Right. So. And do you have access to that? Do you have that map or whatever?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
The maybe last point for the commission on this is, we as a county engineering department have looked beyond the allocated use. If somebody comes to us and says, we'd like to put more than the previously allocated wastewater into this particular point of the system, if we can accommodate them, we are more than happy to do so, as long as they pay the county the use of this existing infrastructure. So let's say you have a base loading, which we all know is based on zoning, but if somebody says we are seeking a land use approval of X, which goes beyond the base sewer loading, and we can accommodate it, I am supporting that we do that on a first-come, first-served birth basis, if paid for in the infrastructure use agreement, and of course only if approved in the land use process. So we should not, through the back door, try to regulate density. Density should be regulated by you and not by us.
But we're going to need that, you know, with your maps, so to speak, the allocation.
No, if a project comes forward, which I've seen a couple now before you, and they're going beyond the use, which is allocated as a base use, we will come before you with a detailed letter as we support it, as we intend to bill for it.
What we're going to do is in our future land use, we're going to project. Mm-hmm. We're going to get population data eventually from Alexis, and then we're going to say, well, here's the zoning, but then the other layer is the sewer water allocations or the potential allocations, you know, because mm-hmm. they become the cap. And then we'll know how many acres it's going to take to hit that potential population and roughly where it's going to go. We're going to have to allow a little bit of room. We can't make it too tight. But so that's why we need the allocations as well as the maps, as best as you can.
The allocations are calculated on a point-by-point basis. So take the assisted living facility you currently wrestled with, or a few weeks ago, a few months ago, I can't remember.
That was a Board of Adjustment.
Board of Adjustment one. But that is a prime example where, from a sewer standpoint, the capacity is there. It is there for the first one who is willing to pay for it, and if it is approved in the land use process, we are happy to follow through on it.
Well, then maybe change my word from allocation to capacity then.
Yeah, I mean,
we need that capacity number to put into our calculation.
And that capacity number, if the application moves to your, we should provide that and say it is well within our capacity. We should give you that information.
Well, we need a little bit up front to do our future land use, right? Because that's going to impact what densities are capable or able in different areas.
So you want us to just, and you remember as one, let's say this one is approved, which takes away from the usable, let's say the buffer. So the next one comes before you right next to it. We may say we only have X. So, but, you know, like when do you want to see this input?
I just want to see the total number in a given area. The total capacity, it could be by sewer district, it could be by future, what you anticipate the future capacity might be, which is a question I was asking you, because we're projecting forward, and we're going to have to project how many people are going to go, where we think they're going to go, and what sewer is going to be available, and that sewer capacity is going to basically tell us what our densities are going to be.
If I may say that this morning, I was in the room with the finance director and our, right-hand person for the administrator, Ms. Jennings. The three of us were discussing enterprise fund capital expenditures, which you will see in the next budget. We're doubling the capacity in Inland Bays. We're adding 30 to 35% capacity at South Coastal. We're expanding the capacity at Pine and Neck by about 30%. And we are maintaining the capacity of Wolf Neck. We're expanding capacity with Lewis, and we're talking with other providers. So from a treatment capacity standpoint, you will see a number you've never seen in the budget before. So we are. It all comes down to transmission. You see, like at this point, all of the providers, all the players will have the capacity to treat. Not all of us have the capacity to get it from point A to point B.
That's something you'll figure out down the road.
Yeah, so to answer your question, I mean, we have like $50 million worth of projects on the book right now that we are going to do in this regional approach, and that could expand based upon some additional customers. But like Hans mentioned, it's very important that we size our transmission facility to move, the wastewater from these from the development, and you can expand the treatment plant kind of easy. So it's resulted in us putting in a lot of two pipe systems right now, some pipes to handle the first smaller phase, but then another pipe in the same trench to, and we're doing that basically from Harbison all the way to our west of Milton facility.
If you look at it from a tiered approach, if you find yourself in tier one, the answer is yes. You find yourself in tier five, the answer is no. If you're in tier three, yes, with improvements. So that sort of gives you the comfort level, but I think we need to provide you that comfort level also on a case-by-case, application-by-application basis with detailed numbers so you don't feel like we're just telling you yes or no, we're just telling you yes with a factor of safety. Yes, we have more than, let's say if the applicant asks for 100 extra EDUs, we should tell you, yes, this is 100 out of 1,000 available. So you feel, no, we're not cutting it close. You feel from a sewer capacity, it should never be a sewer capacity issue. It should always be like a land use issue. What?
I hope you're right about that.
All right, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, Mr. Hudson.
Lou. I'll try to be brief. Christian Hudson, Lewis, Delaware. If you can read my chicken scratch.
I like chickens.
I've heard that.
I like scratch.
Big chicken.
Scratch, bro. I like scratch.
The scratch, yeah.
So I guess, are we on the record? I know the planner.
Yeah, you're on the record.
Meeting's still open. Yeah.
Okay.
Consultant had to leave, but yeah, we're still rolling.
Okay.
We just went longer than we thought.
Yeah.
She had a prior commitment.
She had a prior commitment. We were scheduled to be over by 2. Yeah. So that's okay. Go ahead.
All right. Well, so I guess I have a number of different things, and they're not fully organized, but Commissioner Ross was asking Rodney Wyatt about where he thinks the growth is going, and I just wanted to put my 2 cents in. Concept I'd been coming up with, and it was somewhat in line with the planners, one of the 4 alternatives from, I forget which one of these sessions it's been, but there's been a lot of different sessions with a lot of different slides. But anyway, I think everybody was pretty much in agreement that the growth is heavily directed towards the eastern side of the county, but I tend to think it's on the corridors. If you look at the map, you've got 1, 113, and 13 is the vertical corridors, and 16, 9, and 24, you know, is the major east-west corridors right now. And I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a better location than that where the growth is going. You could heavily weight it more towards the east side, but those corridors seem to be wanting to grow. I mean, I know from a commercial standpoint, you have to be located on a highway just for the eyeballs going by your business. 1, 113, and 13, 9, 24, and 16. I mean, I think that makes the most sense for the commercial growth. And then almost the residential between those, it's almost like 2 squares if you just look at 1 and 113, and then between 16 and 9 and then 9 and 24, if you will, the borders of that being roughly commercial of one kind or another, you know, whether it be B1 or C2 through 7 or however many things there are that they're still discussing. But and then in between those, the squares want to be more densely residential. And that's kind of in a nutshell how it really wants to work right now on the real estate perspective, from my perspective. I would like to advocate for the expansion of those commercial zones and the relaxation of the height requirements within those commercial zones. I think I proposed last time 5 stories or 65 feet. The county currently in the ordinance allows for 5 feet or 42 foot. I would say, you know, there's something to be said for staying below the tree line for aesthetic purposes. You know, you got mature either hardwoods or loblolly pines at about 100 foot tall. Stay a couple stories below that, you know, so 65, 75 feet, 5 stories, 6 stories, something like that. And again, it would probably be more weighted towards, you know, areas where there's already existing high density rather than out into the countryside type thing.
Would that be primarily for hotels and affordable housing, or do you see it for other uses?
So I would see it more for offices, hotels, apartment complexes, things like that. Things that require a high level of infrastructure investment and, with the current setbacks, the current stormwater management, the buffers, the turning radiuses and things like that, you're paying a lot of money for a lot of land that does nothing for you ever. For one of those uses, it becomes extremely cost prohibitive. If you've got to develop, if you want to put a 100-room hotel up, which we did and we opened in 2015, so I can't speak to the current code, but at least the stuff back then, you're talking about 20-25% of your gross site area right off the top becomes unusable space. Now you can mitigate that with the use of good soils and, you know, a water table that's, you know, real sandy for 15 feet. That's wonderful. But you still have a problem of, well, I can't go any higher than 42 feet. So it greatly limits your ability to do infill and limit the sprawl out into the, you know, the countryside. So it's something I think is a really big big issue in commercial development anyway. And again, commercial could be apartment complexes, but certainly the high density uses need to go up, or else they're going to have to go out. And I guess that's a choice for you all on the council to make. And then some things on the presentations today. So in a specific situation where you have multiple regional sewer systems, I guess this is for you mainly, but I'm not asking for an answer, just something to think about, I guess, where you have multiple regional systems in close proximity, and whether those regional systems are county or Tidewater or Artesian or whatever they may be, but there's no CPCN on the properties in between them, what happens in that environment? Because for the county, you have to be adjacent to an existing sewer district for annexation. So if you have two or three properties in between a county annexation area, and you may have two or three different properties, but we could be talking about a couple hundred feet, that, I guess, is a situation where I'd ask you to kind of consider how that works mechanically, because as I forget if it was Chairman Wheatley or Commissioner Ross or who brought it up, but the easements and bringing a lot of these services to market through the easement process is, as you're well aware of, is very cumbersome, trying to get easements from even just two people, let alone, you know, five or ten, even if the distance is a quarter mile or a half a mile. And then again, if you have multiple competing places that you could go to, how does that work from a landowner's perspective? Do you contact all three and just create a bidding war, or you know what I mean? How does a regular person go about that easement process, I guess, is something that I was thinking of today when I was reading this.
If I may, Mr. Hudson, do you?
Please.
The county is limited. Do you remember where we have to be reactive? Even if Mr. Hudson owned a property where the county has interest in serving, we have to have, in order to create a new district area, 50 petitions. So for him to do this, he would have to go through the subdivision process, create a 50-lot subdivision. Then he puts them in 50 different LLCs. He signs it 50 times. He delivers it to us. We hold a public hearing and a referendum. He votes 50 times, empowered by each one of the LLCs to vote. So once he casts all his 50 ballots and we count them, and County Council authorizes the district area creation, that's the only way we can touch it. Obviously, he's not interested in doing that.
That's if it's not contiguous, just to be
that's
clear.
If it's not yeah, contiguous, right. But that's what he was referring
yeah,
to.
Yeah.
So,
right. So they knew.
So this is it's technically possible, however, administratively highly unlikely. So he will most likely approach the other utility providers. And that's what Tier 3 is all about. You know, like that's how Tier 3 should work, because we should not be artificially stopping his process. But by the same token, you know, like it is, you see, we, the county as a service provider in the world of sewer, are somewhat restricted by Delaware law, Title IX. But that's not going to change anytime soon. So having access to the infrastructure certainly makes it easier for him to do, let's say, a coordinated CPCN approach where he can then deal with a utility provider. And we should not stand in the way to do this. Now, if he becomes contiguous tomorrow, and like Mr. Wyatt said, you know, like they being Artesian, not speaking for any other utility provider, have in the past said, okay, Mr. Hudson, we're going to help you out temporarily and then retire the CPCN if it is in an area where the county really should be serving it. So I'd like to see as the Tier 3 as an area where we can try to help not create duplication. That's really what you're after.
Right.
And I think we're all on the same page at this point. That is something which does not serve the end user, the constituents of Sussex County well.
Right. And I have the means to, you know, hire attorneys and tax accountants and things like that in order to enact, you know, these complicated administrative levels. But there's a lot of people in the county that are in these weird gray areas that don't, and it becomes very cost prohibitive very quick for a lot of people. So I wanted to thank you for helping me explain what that is. And then what was the last one? So two things really quickly, and this is on the ordinance level, and I don't know, is that okay to get into at this?
Sure.
So in one of the things, and this is something I'm running into currently, the AR zoning ordinance currently, as long as you're over a certain amount of acreage threshold, allows sports stadiums to be, that's one of the permitted uses. It doesn't provide much limitation in terms of what is done inside those sports stadiums, but I think at least that's something near and dear to my heart. I think should include other uses like concerts, because I mean there's hardly a sports stadium in the country that doesn't have concerts at least sometimes. And then one thing I've not noticed in here but is definitely private infrastructure related, We don't have any that I'm aware of. We do have some private roads that are used publicly or semi-publicly, but that would be something I would encourage throughout this process, at least giving some kind of thought to privately owned roads or toll roads or something of that kind. I don't know what that would look like, but I think we could all agree that the state does a very poor job of allocating resources when it comes to roads, money anyway, down to Sussex County. And I don't know that any of us have any power to do anything about that, except complain consistently and let that fall on deaf ears for a variety of reasons. And anyway, I think that would be something that should be encouraged by the county if we could do that along the lines of, you know, the private water and wastewater providers. Something that would allow that to happen, I think, would be a good thing for a lot of different reasons. So, thank you.
All right, so we thank you. Who's next? Going once, twice. All right then, well listen, thank you all very much for your patience. I'm sure you want to get up and take a walk or something at this point, but that ends our public comment period. Now, I do think we have a couple of housekeeping things, right?
Just a quick, we're getting close to where we need to start advertising the second round of public meetings, so I wanted to run our times by everybody. I believe last time we did 4:30 to 7. Is everybody okay with that?
This is the May 1, 2, 3.
It's the May meetings, or do you want
to... What's the format of them? Because that was fine. My only comment would be that was fine for open house type thing. If we're going to have presentations...
This one will have a presentation. Do you want to do 5 to 7:30? Because we have to be done by 7:30 because we have to be out of everywhere by 8, which means we have to clean up.
Yeah, I think this time of year it's less critical. I was more concerned about... I was getting calls about people that want to be out after dark. So if you do them that either of those time frames, I mean, I would be more concerned about what accommodates the public than what accommodates the six people sitting here.
I was just thinking about make sure it's a time when people are out of work and done for
like,
the day.
More like 5
to 7:30.
7:30, I would say.
Okay, we can do.
Just to help people get.
Okay, and then just a reminder, the next one is April 21st is the next workshop, and the main topic was it was only a half day to kind of discuss and kind of go over the format for those public meetings. If you wanted to throw something on it, let me know, because we need to post the agenda.
Can we try to finish this utilities at least?
We can add utilities.
And then if we can visit historical since we have it. And try to get it out of the way.
Yes, I would like. By all means, let's.
And then
put it
if
on
we get that far, we'll just stop.
Yeah,
because that one is from 9 to noon.
But I think we need to start thinking about a long-term schedule.
You mean 9
as well.
To 3 or 2?
That one's 9 to noon.
Well, then we'll be here till 2.
I can't do afternoon.
But I think we need to start thinking about a longer-term schedule too. for additional work. Obviously, we're going to have more meetings. So, you know, maybe between now and when we meet again or Thursday night or whatever, we can be thinking about what works for McCormick Taylor and you, Janelle, probably primarily. When does the legislature get out? June 30th? They're in until, no, they're off this week, right?
They're off. This week and next week.
Yeah, our next regular Thursday meeting is the 27th, right?
So then, you know, then we'd be looking at Mondays or Fridays. Probably Fridays might be a better call.
Are Wednesdays out again?
Oh, when the session comes back in, it's going to be more difficult for Kim. So maybe if we can go with Fridays, it'd be a lot easier for me on it.
Yeah. We're starting to have speakers, and I know you had mentioned we're going to get the working group people in. When we talk about the schedule, I'm worried that we're working on elements and then having speakers. You know, do we need to coordinate it so we get
It'd be nice if we could, you know, coordinate it so we have the appropriate people at the appropriate time. And that's why I'm thinking about the longer-term schedule. You know, maybe instead of trying to jam in, you know, too many new elements, we maybe pick a new element, put it up front, and then try to edit an element we've already worked on in the rear to fill in and see how that works. But whatever, you know, it's a discussion. It's not a dictation.
Yeah, right.
But I think that we need people that are pertinent to the conversation up front in the process, if we can have them. It'd be interesting in having that same, you know, Tidewater. I'd love to have Tidewater's perspective on if they agree about the growth, where they're going to grow as well.
Be interested in hearing on their approach to the better coordination.
But if my math is wrong, I mean, I'm a pragmatic kind of a person with a big problem, and I usually try to look at it from a 30,000-foot level, and like all engineers, I'm not one, but they add 20% at least to their numbers so that they don't miss. And, you know, but I still think, you know, combining the population expectations along with sewer and water capacity that's probably going to be available, we're projecting out 10 years to 30 years, and that's what we have to be thinking about. How do we project out and come reasonably close? We're not going to hit it, but and have a flexibility so that we don't restrict availability of land for commercial use, for residential use, industrial use, and those things. Because if we don't zone enough, then the numbers are going to fly through the roof and affordability goes out the window. And so, I mean, to me, it's a calculation. So that's where we need data. And we need as much data as we can get on sewer capacities. I understand they have the distribution thing, but they'll figure that out on the fly.
Well, I think it's more what Hans is saying. It's the, I don't know, Keller, you probably know, you know way more about this than I certainly do. It's that I don't know that the plants have the capacity issue. It's the transmission and the pump stations.
Yeah, but they're going to fix those. I mean, like they said, this is phase one. We put in a line, then we put in phase two. They'll fix that.
But that's not that easy to do.
I mean, it was easy to do. But if the capacity is there, they can expand the distribution. It's expensive, and it's not easy to do. But it will happen if the growth is there and the capacity is there. But that'll tell us the maximum that they can treat. So if you have an area in a sewer district and its capacity is 100%, and we zone it for 120%, we've made a mistake, haven't we? Right? So that capacity is our limit. And then we're going to have to back off probably about 20% of that in case they miss, or are you going to add, figure they have engineered it 20% over, but there's your bookends in a geographical area.
I don't know if it's that simple, though, because if you have a geographical area and you can have the wastewater treatment plant with all the capacity in the world, and it just seems like, though, if you've got a main pump station that's serving that area and it's got capacity issues, you know, are you going to say that to serve this one area that you want to have zoned based on the wastewater treatment plant, who's going to pay for that major upgrade?
The new building is going to pay for it. They'll take it out and build it up.
Does that work? I mean, is that in that?
It's a money thing. When the numbers cross, it'll happen. We've done it on the farm so many times, it makes you sick.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like, oh, well, I don't know. I think it's a lot more complicated.
You can never build enough for the future because you don't have the money.
Shall we adjourn? Since everybody's grabbing their gear, we're adjourned.